Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Welcome to our final episode of the show before it is Christmas. This is Comic Book Nation.
What?
I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and that muted response for my Grinch co-hosts over here, Janelle Wheeler and Matthew
Kofi Magyar. Was reading. He was waiting for us to sing a Christmas carol, and it's the first time we let him down with the singing,
Matt. We let him
Matt.
Down.
I know, I'm like, it's Christmas. Like, I never go enthusiastic, and you guys are like,
better watch
and
out. You better not cry.
There it is.
Matt.
I have, what? I can't be put on the spot.
Yo, you better hit some Mariah Carey notes right now.
I'm telling you why.
There you go.
Santa Claus is coming to town.
And that's what we do for holiday spirit here at this podcast. No wonder we have a cynical reputation. But welcome to Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I'm your host, Kofi Outlaw. Janelle Wheeler, Matthew Aguilar are with me. Today, guys, we are going to bend our minds and get back into the Matrix. The Matrix Resurrections is out. And originally, we were going to do like a whole episode about this, but we got some other stuff we got to cover. And so we're going to do that stuff as well and just kind of pack it all into one show here. But in addition to The Matrix, we got to talk about that Hawkeye finale.
Yeah.
New comic books. But first up, right at the top, right before we came on, this new Uncharted movie trailer dropped. And so this hits kind of a lot of stuff because it hits Tom Holland post-Spider-Man stuff now that Spider-Man No Way Home is out. It hits gaming stuff, which is always part of Matt's agenda. And of course, it hits big movie stuff, which is always part of our agenda. So here we go, guys. Uncharted movie trailer. What did you think about this second version? Because I think we were all we were kind of okay about the first one, but we were still having trouble buying Holland as like Nathan Drake and, you know, Mark Wahlberg as Sully. And this trailer does make some efforts to correct that, correct?
Why didn't they start with this trailer?
Yeah. I mean, that's because exactly how I feel.
I think you have to, you know, you have to stumble out and then you got to get to the focus groups and see what the Twitters and the YouTubes are saying. And then you got to
like
make a better trailer.
It's like night and day. It's like night and day. This trailer is so much better. I'm not saying this is going to be a like epic Uncharted movie, but good Lord, I would have felt a hell of a lot better coming out of that first trailer if this is what I had. I mean, Tom Holland actually kind of feels like Nathan Drake in spots.
And I mean, like, kind of. Hey,
kind of. Yeah. He's never going to look. The casting
is a wrong casting.
I'm never going to get quintessential Nathan Drake from this vision, which is okay. I've made peace with that. Yep. I'm never going to get that, right? So just going off what they're trying to do, which is very much an origin story, beginning of his career, and then Sully kind of leading him. And we even get the mustache thing towards the end, right? Like they're going to move into that direction. Okay.
Oh, that was our big finish. The mustache.
The mustache, right? But like, there are parts when like Holland is like the swinging from the chandelier part, right? Where he's like, oh, this is going to hurt. Like all those little asides he's making. That's Nathan Drake. So if I can at least get that for 50% of this movie.
I'm trying to remember which one was at the top of Spider-Man. Like which one did they play in the theaters? Which trailer? I'm trying to recall because I know I saw a trailer because I had to explain to my dad that it was a video game, but I don't think it was the new one. It wasn't
was
this one then.
Yeah, it was.
I don't think so. Yeah.
And, yeah, it was the first one they showed.
Okay.
Because I just went and saw Spider-Man again on Monday. They showed the first one, with him in the cars hitting him in the face and
yeah.
rolling out of the plane and yes. doing that whole nine. Yeah, so that's the first trailer.
And my dad was impressed with that. He was really excited about the action. And that is someone obviously who has no affiliation, knows nothing about the video game. So it's good to see that, like, you know, a normal consumer of non-video game products can kind of get hyped about it.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. Mm-hmm. Test subject. Papa yeah. Wheeler. Boom. I mean, no lie. I mean, when I ever say I've done focus groups, that's all I'm talking about is I talk to people who, like, are my family and don't
yeah.
like me, or just are, like, friends who don't care about what I do. And if they care, I'm like, I've talked to some people and I got feedback and I know. Streets are talking, but I mean, so that's how the sauce is made. Boom. So, yeah, I mean, this chart, I mean, I think the tone of this one felt less, more comfortable. Like, here's the movie we made, and like, we're cool with that, and less like, oh my God, we want you to like us, Uncharted fans, which felt like the first one. So, I don't know. I'm like, curiously hopeful. What's that?
But like, it wasn't that.
No, like, I know. They didn't.
That first trailer was like, terrible for Uncharted fans.
Oh, I know, but yeah. it was because, like, trying too hard, right? Yeah, like, they okay. threw, like, so much in. They tried to hit, like, all the beats they thought you wanted to see, right? Like,
oh. So mm-hmm.
this one, like I said, just felt more natural. Like, here's yeah. the actual movie they made, and this is what it's going to feel like more. So I'm curiously optimistic about Uncharted. Like, I always get
feel
funny
mark?
Saying, yeah, but I always feel funny saying these kinds of words because, you know, I feel like it'd come back to bite me. But right now, I am curiously optimistic about Uncharted. All right. I'll give
yeah,
it
I mean,
that.
The action alone is exciting. Like, if you're an action movie fan, a couple of those sequences just from the trailers are really cool and I want to see them. So,
yeah. All right. So, that's it. Uncharted, we do not hate it. Good. Moving right along.
Are they going to put that yeah. on their commercials?
Yeah.
Comic book says Uncharted, we do not hate
don't
it.
Don't hate it. I might. Comic Book Nation says, I might actually do it. I might actually see it. Moving right along. So, main topic today, The Matrix. We don't have money for the actual music, so that's all I got. Yeah. So, quick story. I feel like sometimes it's good to kind of like give context to these discussions. The Matrix was the movie that really changed things for me. It was the time yeah. that I kind of realized that this market, like everything we all do now here at Comic Book and all these other fan sites and the whole concept of a fan site was kind of born. You know, I'm not going to take all the credit, but born in my mind when I saw The Matrix, because it was 1999. I was senior year in high school and all these movies started coming out that, like, you know, everybody who looks back at film knows how crazy 99 was, but all these, especially the summer movies, it was The Matrix, it was Star Wars, Sixth Sense, all this stuff started coming out. And then it was that point in high school you get to where, like, everybody had gotten into college or not, knew what they were doing or not, you know, all that had been figured out. And it was just that senioritis where everybody doesn't give a F, right? And all the social circles start to collapse and you're basically people just, you know, hook up with the people they've always wanted to before they go off to college and that whole gray area. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. So
I was in ninth grade, so it was a little bit of a different experience.
But it's still everybody goes through
was,
high school
it was
period.
Yeah, life you know the period. Changing. Yeah, this movie was life changing. It turned my entire, like, everything around. Like, I started questioning religion, yeah. oh, politics, man. Government.
You're going, you know, in a, like, different direction than I'm about to.
I really did, though. Say. That's what this movie really challenged me on an intellectual level and on, like, this futuristic level. And ever since then, I've been the same. I've been so enticed by, like, the future, aliens, robots, like, sci-fi in general. Like, I really feel like Matrix is what got me into sci-fi or like anything like this, like technology driven. So I'm with you on that. It was life-changing for me. It's in my top five favorite movies of all time.
Wow, you are really more deeper than I was. All I was going to say was I saw the social circles of different people begin to congregate and talk about this movie. And
yeah.
for the first time in movies, I had seen people sit down with each other and, like, talk about and debate and theorize and comment on. And this was all in real life, kids, like, out in our high school in the cafeteria. But it made me realize, like, you know, blockbuster movies had turned a corner. The Matrix, as Janelle just so eloquently kind of put it, it was more than just entertainment. It made you think. It made you discuss. And it began this kind of trend in entertainment where entertainment could be more serious. And that's mm-hmm. what began to influence and bleed into comic book movies. And then the later comic book movies, you know, the next wave. It all kind of began with this. So Matrix was a big deal, and the sequels were in the thing of the midnight showings, and you know, that was like crazy, one of the most hyped. I mean, it was like the Star Wars of our era for us who love Star Wars, didn't get to grow up with that theatrical experience. The Matrix trilogy kind of was.
That's cool. That's a cool way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is the thing. Time out. Stephen Bernard is in the comments yelling at us about Spider-Man spoilers. Marvel.com is putting out Spider-Man spoilers. Take your comment to Marvel.com and say, hey, Marvel.com, stop posting Spider-Man spoilers. Then come back here and talk to us, okay? Because we wait for when Marvel takes the lead. When Marvel's posting articles saying, Tom Holland talks about everybody he was in Spider-Man with, that's no longer a spoiler blanket.
Spoiler!
According to Marvel.
What is that
so
time?
Steven, like,
what
find,
do you guys?
Steven, go find Kevin. Talk to Kevin. Come back here. Merry Christmas. Let's get back to what we're talking about.
I feel like it's different for every person. I feel like you've talked to
everybody. Well, I mean, for comic book, I feel like comic book really does a good job like holding back until something hits, you know?
We literally wait till Marvel.
Okay.
Marvel starts saying, okay, we're going to talk about
this. Or whatever studio, you're dealing with.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But in this case, so.
I'm kind of proud of you guys because the fact that like BD wasn't just going ham, he's just trying to type all these like cryptic tweets. And I was like, let me know when it's time to mute you.
Yeah, I mean, we try to preserve it for fans. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Like, if you're on the internet, like, this long after Spider-Man No Way Home came out, like, I don't know what to tell you.
I avoided spoilers and I'm on a comic book podcast.
Yeah, I avoided spoilers and I do this for a living.
That's impressive.
And I watched it 2 days ago.
I did my job and still
we gotta spoilers. Get back to Matrix.
Yeah, let's get back to Matrix. No more Spider-Man spoiler talk. Don't bring that. Take that to the Marvel podcast, okay? All right, Matrix, go. Get flash forward to here. Coming back and bring the Matrix back is obviously a big risk and like a big kind of deal to try to do. But obviously the world has been through significant changes, and even the people involved with the Matrix have been through significant changes. And so now we come back to the Matrix Resurrections, and it's a daunting task, right? Like, how do you do this movie, which they teased was going to be very much kind of a callback to the first one and doing a lot of stuff with the first one without getting, like, repetitive and dull. And, man, Lana Wachowski just dives into this. And to say she has fun with it is an understatement. This movie is probably one of the most, like, outside of a Charlie Kaufman movie, this movie is... Which, and I feel like Charlie Kaufman could have like stepped in and written part of the Matrix Resurrections, and we'll get to that. But it is the first part of this movie and the second part of this movie are very different experiences, at least for me. But the first part of it is not at all what I think anybody was expecting, and is probably going to be one of the more divisive things we probably talk about or hear about in movies this year. But I, at first, was like, what is this? Because I sat down to watch this with my brother, and we both were like, what is this? Like, what is happening in this movie? But then when it kind of clicks and gets going, I was like, okay. And then when I ended the movie, because it's on HBO Max, I could see it again. I would stream it again, and I watched the first part again, and I actually enjoyed it a lot more. So even though I don't think it is as good in quality as the first trilogy, I think the action and some of the filming is a little rough in spots. But again, I also wonder how much of that has to do with the COVID thing, because I feel like there's a lot of COVID-itis in this movie, particularly where you can see like, okay, we were filming and stuff was cool. Then we were filming and stuff wasn't cool. And there's a lot of that. But I think the end result is I would watch more Matrix after this, and that is always the key end question, right? Like, would you watch more after this? And for me, I'm going to say like, yeah, I would watch what was going, like more of this. And Brett in the comments is like, yeah, the first hour you're trying to figure out what's going on. But yeah, that's what you had to do in the first Matrix.
Right.
And they even make a joke in this movie about how do you re-deliver that experience to the audience knowing that they know already that the Matrix franchise exists and what it is. Like, and it's a whole, okay,
see, yeah, that's crazy why, meta. That's why I loved this so much. I love this movie.
Yeah, me too.
From the first part, I really enjoyed.
We're gamers, meta. And I wonder if like it just appeals to us a little bit more. But I was like,
but that's key, and I think because we need to talk about that because that's one thing this movie does smartly. It addresses the fact that the entire culture has changed. Mm-hmm. Back when The Matrix came out, it was like Gen Xers in their like basement with their crazy Mac DOS computers. Those were like hackers, right?
Yeah.
Like now you're talking about an entire world where, and they even incorporate this in the movie, where like streaming and window streaming or like even hologram crap like is all part of the culture. And like a new generation of hackers is they're familiar with stuff that's completely you know, different in this universe, but also a reflection of, you know, how our culture has moved.
Like when they start from, well, okay. Are we spoilers? Non-spoilers, by the way, before I
think we're just getting like some loose thoughts in and then we're going to go spoilers. Okay.
So the, you know, when they start with that premise, like this is the core premise without going too far into it of like that gaming is so centric to this idea and the way is that, I already, and Janelle's right, people who are already predisposed to gaming and ideas and in that space are immediately like at home, and you don't have to do a bunch of like when he's got the, you know, there's like a certain part, like when you kind of that opening intro sequence. To
hey, we don't got the time for it. Hey, let's just go full spoilers. I don't know.
It's hard to dance around that.
Without, can I just like, say like
one... Let's go full spoilers. Nick, put on your headphones. Nick Floyd, our producer, our guest producer today, has not seen The Matrix, and he's really looking forward to it for the holidays. So we want him to put on his earmuffs right now because this is our Christmas present to him. We are not going to ruin this movie for you.
Okay. Sir. And it's because it's super hard to dance around that and not actually say stuff. Okay. So when the opening sequence of like Neo or, you know, still Thomas Anderson at this point is looking at the screens and he has like, he's doing all the building of the game. And then he has like the separate screen where like all that code is. And he's like, you automatically have a language. Like Janelle's right. Like that language is very easy to understand for a segment of people. And when you start diving into the meta stuff, it was very easy to understand. Like the way they delivered this whole, this was a video game that you made about your life and you wrote and all these ideas are you, and you're seeing all the flashbacks. It is very much cut like a video game in that respect. How many times have we seen the trope of like someone losing their memories and having to recover everything, right? All that story is built into this. I thought that was a genius way of, yes, commenting on everything, but also just delivering it in a way that like a new generation of people is going to quickly understand so we can get to all the good stuff. Like it's easier to process that way. I don't know. Did you feel that
and
way?
And even showing like the flicks from the first, like little clips from the first trilogy.
And like the way it's cut. Yeah. So I don't know. That for me, I was in like, and I understood what we were talking about. And I liked all the plays on that, like the meetings between them all when they're talking about the ideas. Yeah. And they're so good, right?
And they let you know that that is the meta trick because, I mean, they include that as the post-credit scene, right? Like, they go, they don't do anything about the Matrix or some big reveal. They just go back to the gaming guys and all that stuff, right? I think it gets a little on the nose, though, when they start dropping Warner Brothers' name in there. And they're like, they're making us make a new Matrix. And I was like, okay, guys, all right. And I was like, settle down there, kitty cat. Like, come on. Like, we're getting a little cat here.
I also agree with Kofi on, like, I guess my biggest – well, okay, two things. My biggest nitpick is actually probably the action. Someone mentioned in the comments, like, no guns for Neo. that's also kind of a thing.
There's a lot that The Matrix holds itself accountable for.
Right.
Like, Keanu Reeves has moved on to a new place, and he's like, I don't want to be shooting up people and, like, doing that. Like, that's not me anymore.
That so doesn't even need thing. To, going no. with the theory of
yeah, exactly, the of the movie. And Carrie Ann, and, like, just repositioning Carrie Ann Moss's character as more than just, you know, female sidekick to Neo, because she was, and commenting and on the joke of that's what her, like, life is. It's just, it's kind of a meta joke about how the franchise took this character who was supposed to be this badass hacker, independent woman, and it was still made in a time where she had to become, like, girlfriend of Neo, like dies, props up male character, and like do that. And now things are very different, right? Mm-hmm. Like now in the end, she's Superman, and she is equal to him in the power. And, you know, they're both the one. And this is a commentary on the evolution of where we are in storytelling in Blockbuster. I mean, this is a very meta movie. And once you kind of get that part of it, it is a lot of fun. But once you get out of this initial, and that sequence, like I said, a Charlie Kaufman movie, that I think it really did for me, and I was redeeming. That whole sequence to White Rabbit is so great with Keanu and the pills, and it being like Requiem for a Dream or something like that, or just him taking the pills and going through daily life. It was a little cynical. I mean, Lana Wachowski's a little too cynical for me in about how she views us in modern society because... But I mean, if you're the maker of the Matrix, you probably do feel that way.
Right.
You pumped all this religion, concern about like, what are we doing? What's technology? Where are our minds at? And then you look at today and you're just like, WTF, like everybody's in the Matrix, like regardless. And so,
Go ahead, Janelle.
Well, we just have a few people talking in the comments, and I love the Christmas said I love the new Matrix. Still can't touch the original, but it gets the franchise back on track. And I do agree with that. In that, like, the one thing I was going to say even before we put up the spoiler was, like, the stakes are different in this. Like, we're not saving the world. It doesn't feel like it's this, like, huge, like, saving the world. It's a love story. Like, it's them two. We need to go back and rescue someone. It's not, we have to literally free the minds of the entire existence of humankind. And so, obviously, the stakes are different, but it's still super enjoyable. And then Bun says, do we need to see this in the theaters? Will it be just as good if you watch on HBO Max? I wish I saw it in the theaters. Like, I felt that it was a muted experience on a TV.
Oh, man.
Personally.
I mean, I watched it with 4K in a sound system here, and it was still pretty good. But geez, it's a Matrix. No, I mean, I'm not. I'm just stating, like, facts. For my...
I didn't even think about that.
Come on, I thought you guys are talking to gamers who understand.
4K, no, man, I'm watching it on my giant screen.
I understand gaming language, but I can't hear 4K. Like,
I'm sitting here on my black and white little box.
No, I'm just saying, like, in those kind of circumstances, it is good. But I would say theatrical experience first and foremost. This is the Matrix. I mean, it
like,
was
even
a theatrical.
Even the sound, like, I just feel like it'd just be so, like, earth shaking, like if you saw it in the theater. Yeah,
I'm gonna be the outsider of the group. I didn't miss one bit about watching it on HBO Max.
I
don't have
everything
high def
that's going
like,
on right now, obviously. Like,
but
it's
no,
a
no, not like
weighted
for
question,
that though,
right?
not anything to do with that, actually. Like, I actually just really enjoyed, like, there wasn't anything on screen, and maybe that comes back to my central point of like, as far as the action goes, I was kind of like. The action was good. I liked the action and the gunplay and stuff because we actually do get a lot of gunplay. It's just not Neo related. But like, I just didn't like. There wasn't. I saw some of the things. There was a little bit of that COVID haze to certain scenes. Certain explosions looked a little weird. Like not like almost like they could have used a little more time in the oven type of thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe another six months to really polish that and not make it look like wire work or not make it look like this. But like the other stuff. Was awesome. And some of the action's really cool. Like there's a whole rooftop sequence, right? With just Neo and Trinity. And I thought that was awesome with like helicopters and stuff like that. But nothing on that really screamed to me like I need this on a giant screen and I need to surround it. Like I really enjoyed the stuff that was the meat of the movie, which is all the meta stuff, all the dialogue between those and this growing, like Janelle said, this growing story between these two that is a love story, but not in the prototypical rom-com way. It's fully two fully developed characters, and I love rom-com.
Definitely not a rom-com.
But like it's two fully developed characters coming into like their ideas of who they are, where they fit into this, what the meaning for them is, and all this other stuff, right? So I really like thought that was the meat of the movie. I don't need that on a giant theater. Like I'm perfectly happy with that. Yeah. I feel like I came away satisfied with a full experience. But my other thing I wanted to mention before was that thank you, Jessica Henwick, for turning down the MCU. Just for a bit. You'll get there in another one, right? And you were already technically part of it. But like, oh my God, Bugs is
this was her movie,
my favorite character in this whole damn movie.
Well, I mean, let's get to that because some of that I want to talk about the world building because we got to the meta part and how it deals with reintroducing the Matrix and Neo and on Trinity and all that stuff. But there is a definite, and like I said, when you get to the second half of this movie, I really enjoy the actual new world we find ourselves in and the ideas that are presented there for the larger Matrix mythos, right? So you had this idea that after the machine war, Neo changed things, right? And so some people and some machines get the idea like, yeah, we got to unite and work together and not be in this binary type of thinking, which again is a meta commentary on our society and where we were, are, you know, and maybe need to start thinking. And so like Niobe forms this new society, Io, and that's where like the hackers like Bugs, Jessica Henwick, and half the cast of Sense8 are, you know, like off, you know, hold up and doing this kind of
thing. This is what they were doing.
And it's a cool evolution of the Matrix because, which was all about, I mean, a lot of it was about the style, the aesthetic design and all that. And this new world, the outside world is now like, you know, it used to be like in the Matrix was the cool part. Outside the Matrix was like not so cool, right? And now it's like, yeah, outside the Matrix is also pretty cool. Like seeing these cool machine characters who are like awesome.
Oh my God, the sentients are amazing. Yeah.
The sentient, like the new Morpheus.
Morpheus. I love Morpheus.
Who basically, I mean, way to take that, because I rewatched the whole trilogy like in the days leading up to this. Yeah, way to take that big baby face from Matrix Revolution and actually make it into something cool and useful for this movie with all the swarming beads and all that. New Morpheus and that whole kind of explanation and just having these kind of digital machine characters that can help you now. It made this team cooler and like the ideas cooler. And yeah, I thought the like new world design was my favorite part of this, was getting out and seeing all these kind of things with the new machines and stuff like that.
Yeah, even the kind of on top of the world building, like just expanding on the lore with, you know, Zion and like what happened in between, but also the fact that like, I like that everything is not binary anymore. So like with the sentience introduced, right? They even say it at one point, like us is a different meaning. It's not us versus them. It's like whoever is kind of united in a thing. But then we also see that there was like a war between machines and sentience, right? There was like a war for power when like the power levels were so low.
Well, that was the interesting thing. It's like when this new idea that Neo did about kind of going to the machine world and talking to the head machine and fight and uniting with him to stop Smith, it was the people who went for new ideas survived, and the people who kind of didn't go for the new ideas and thought they could live in these old binary ways died off, which is a whole level of another commentary, right?
Yeah.
Because Zion, you know, falls, the old machine world is kind of like in disarray and having its own problems. And it's like, Io is looking cool. Like, you know, they're growing strawberries and stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, and that was a very, like, and like I said, those are very interesting ideas that kind of change the entire paradigm of this series into something new. And it gives you something new to think about, right? So,
yeah.
Niobe, still a badass, though.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, like, I feel like a lot of these comments, like, Valentina has a beautiful explanation. I guess the meta thing is fun, but to be honest, this movie felt short for me. Saying that, like, the music wasn't even that impactful, which is, like, something that super stood out about the first one. You're right. Like, I did feel like we were missing certain elements that would have taken it over the top, and certain like action scenes or special effects that really like put the like Matrix on the map, like the slow-mo bullet thing in the first film. Like, we didn't have any one moment like visually that stood out. It was like, oh my gosh, this is like just so immersive. This is so crazy. I've never seen this before. And that I do wish that they tried a little harder to be innovative with just one or two things that like just were so like breathtaking. And I do hear that though. And you know, you don't realize things until you get into a conversation. That's
you're making a commercial
like
for HBO Max, girl.
Yeah.
No, I mean, because I agree. I think looking back on it, I think of a couple scenes that are really cool, but I can't think of one scene that is Neo avoiding the bullets.
Yeah.
There's not that particular scene. Like, I love the bike chase. I actually thought that, like, seeing him use his powers on the back of the bike and she's like, I thought there's some really cool moments there. I thought actually some of the coolest tech stuff was just in the real world with the sentience. I thought some of that stuff was cool, like seeing Yaya literally become beads and like form through tunnels and all that. That was really cool. I'm kind of conflicted on Yaya's Morpheus. Like, I don't know. Like, there are parts that work for me and there's parts that don't.
Well, the franchise kind of screwed itself. And there are some elements that comment on how this franchise got commercialized. But, like, they killed him off in that canon game.
Look, this movie does leave that as canon.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The game,
so they had to do something about that.
In retrospect, though, there are parts that I wish, you know, we could get, like... Look, I am all for continuity, but, you know, there are times where I feel like if it's better for the franchise overall to fuck it and move forward, do it. I don't necessarily think, like, I know it was an event at the time, but so were a lot of things, okay? Like, at one point, Chumbawamba was, like, a huge band. It was a huge, like, they had a huge single. That doesn't mean we build everything else around them for the next, like, 30 years. I'm just saying, like, why can't we ignore that and bring Lawrence Fishburne back to be...
Lord knows there could be a way now.
Right. And I do like the time gaps were actually some of the most interesting things.
Yeah.
And by the way, no hate on Chumbawamba. I don't want, like, the Chumbawamba fandom to come at me.
No, but I think one of the comments I saw about this movie that was kind of, like, very fitting was somebody said that this is a movie where they had cast, you know, John Wick director Chad Stahelski as an actual character named Chad rather than have him punch up the action of this movie a little bit. And, like, I just I died from that when I was hashtag dead. You know, like, but it's true. I mean, Chad Stahelski is in this movie as a guy named Chad, but the action doesn't seem as strong as it could be. I think there was one sequence on the train that was like, I was like, okay, that's pretty impressive. And some parts
that was what they were doing.
But otherwise, like, yeah. Then, I mean, Lana Wachowski maybe needs some stunt coordination. And you also don't, but again, you don't know, like, what can we do now? Because I was looking at that crowd scene at the end in the cafe and I was like,
that's a lot of people.
Omicron,
in there, man.
Is that where Delta came from? Like, there are a lot of people in there. If those are real people, that's a lot of people. Like, you know,
as conflicted I was at Al
Morpheus,
half of
those
by the way,
weren't people, though. So.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I hope not. Yeah, I hope
that's
not.
True. As conflicted I was on Morpheus, and maybe that's just because I have, like, Lawrence Fishburne, like, I just have that ingrained in me, right? Like, just that take on the character. I actually really dug what they did with Smith. I actually was fine with that. Maybe because that character never really, other than the Anderson, like other than that, that never really resonated with me a ton. So
I,
like,
loved that agent. Like, he hated awesome. Him so much. And I was really worried that I would be pissed he wasn't there. But you're right. They did a great job with that. And also
Hugo Weaving ain't coming back. So yeah, the dude from Hamilton was real good, man. Like,
is that where he's from?
Yeah, he's the king. He's King George.
Oh, man, I love that song.
Okay, he's King George.
Question. Wait.
Yeah, but he was good. Somebody said on Twitter, it was like, this was the yassification of Agent Smith. And I was like, that works. Yeah, but it's just good. The gaming setup, because I love Mythic Quest. And it reminded me a lot of Mythic Quest. And Danny Pudi's character in Mythic Quest was, you know, he plays the business guy who's like the shark and has to do all the shark stuff for the game company to keep them going. And, like, yeah, I was just like, this is a realistic Silicon Valley. Like, a guy like Thomas Anderson would have this dude as his partner. And, like, yeah. And that's just a great dynamic for them as, like, kind of the creative and the business guy of this, like, gaming company. Like, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
And that scene, and I like the scene where he remembers, like, he is Agent Smith. And it starts because it's sprinkling in the rain. And he's just like, wait a minute. And he's like, I know what I'm supposed to do here. And he just starts busting off shots. And I was like, oh, okay, now we're rolling.
Awesome.
So that guy, I mean, if you got to have somebody step in for Hugo Weaving, he did a good job. So,
yeah.
Not mad at that.
Give it out of 10?
Yeah, let's wrap this up and take an ad break. But, let's get some final ratings. Out of 10, for me, I would say 7. I'd say 7 out of 10.
Janelle?
Matt? Oh, no, I was going to go last.
Because, I'll say why. Because I like the world building. I like the meta, clever way they get back into this story and into this world, and it comments and makes us think about, you know, our world again. But I think the action was a bit of a letdown. So that's why I'm going to take off those points and say 7.
Hmm.
Yeah. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. But I feel a little biased because of my love for these characters and my excitement of seeing them back on not the big screen, but a screen. my point's taken off is because obviously, like, the music didn't really move me as much. It is more of a love story. It's not as, like, heady as I would want it to be. And yeah, the, like, not specifically action, but like just the vision, like something visually engaging, like something that just like sticks with you, even like the ripples in the side of the building or something like that.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with Janelle. I think 8 for me. I think, okay. I think it's, and it's honestly, I
is that Nick. Frozen? Is that Frozen, Matt?
No,
it's so it. Good.
Is it really?
Oh, no, no, there he is.
Just a little bean. Like you were just grinning ear to ear. It was great. he really agreed
think,
with me.
I think eight for me. For the same reason, I actually think Janelle nailed it perfectly. I don't think I need to add more to that. Like,
I'm on fire. You guys approve of me today. Let's get it.
Yeah, no, I think she I think she said it best. Like it was for the same reasons. The action, like you're right. There's not like this. I don't come away with just like, man, everyone has to watch this scene. And that is something you felt even in Reloaded. And now I do think Reloaded and Revel, like I do think those last two movies are probably going to get a little, you know, revisionist history as far as how good they were. Cause like there are, I like Reloaded more than most people, but I feel like for the last, you know, however many years people have been like crapping on those movies and like now they're going to be held up as like these Reloaded. Classic things. And I don't necessarily feel that way, but I can't say from each one, there were scenes that like wowed me just from a technical and action standpoint. And I didn't get that in this one. So that would be my main critique. Otherwise I was hyped. I mean, I want to see more bugs. I want to see more of this new world. I want sentience, like all that stuff. Like we didn't even mention like half the side characters they kind of tether to and bring back. Chopra's character, who's like a Thai. Like they do a lot of world building stuff, like Kofi said. So I think I'm excited for the future.
Mm-hmm. All right, and no more spoilers because I got to message Nick Floyd and tell him that we're done talking spoilers. All right, so
done-zo.
That was our discussion of the Matrix Resurrections. If you want to know anything, we have NA Explained posts. We have kind of other analysis posts. We have a bunch of interviews with the cast, including Carrie Ann Moss, Keanu Reeves, Yaya. I can't believe I'm Groff, Jonathan Groff, who plays Smith. We have a lot of Jessica Henwick. So we have a lot of good interviews with the cast. You can also watch on comicbook.com as well. Right now, we are going to take a long overdue break, pay some bills. But when we come back, we are breaking down the Hawkeye finale and talking new comics for the week. So be sure to stay tuned for that.
Bro.
We are back. This is Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com, and we are diving into the Hawkeye season finale. We're going in. It's been a couple days. We're doing full spoilers. And if you missed our discussion of the Matrix Matrix Resurrections, you can go back and check that out at the beginning of the podcast. So let's talk about, I just saw an update. Spider-Man has earned $813.9 million in 10 days. That is crazy. Dang, that thing is about to hit a barely.
Wow.
Oh, and wow, Joan Didion died too. So a lot happening. That's crazy. So
boy, you're just dropping all kinds of
this is Twitter in front of my face right now. Like we should make a podcast of just us seeing Twitter and scroll in front of
and
our
reacting. That would be so fun.
Copyright Pendy, don't you steal my idea.
It'd be like the geek versions of Diane Warwick, you know?
Yeah. So Hawkeye finale. First of all, I think this might be my favorite Marvel series.
There it is.
Wow.
Yeah, come on Disney over. Plus series of the year. So mine is Hawkeye, exciting. Loki, WandaVision, What If, Falcon, Winter Soldier.
Wow.
What if?
Reverse that last one. Falcon, Winter Soldier, What If. I was crazy for a minute there.
Whoa.
But even so, even that said, I think I made a comment on Phase Zero because I'm always in their comments just talking about whatever they're talking about. And I said, it was the best of the bad Marvel Disney Plus finales. And that's what I say about Hawkeye. I do think these Marvel Disney Plus series are always best in their penultimate episodes, you know, the one before the last one. But of all the final battle ones, I think I had the most fun with Hawkeye's, right? And I don't think a lot of things were perfect. that Kingpin stuff, all this Daredevil stuff over the last week, I'm kind of like, is this good or have I been trolled? Like, I mean, I know, comics, and we know Kingpin's probably coming back and all of that, but there was a little weird, and you could tell this one was a little COVID-y. You could tell a lot of the spots, you know, were a little COVID-y, the way they separated this fight, the way it was just like, you know, Haley Steinfeld and Vincent D'Onofrio in an empty store. But the idea of Kingpin being like this badass who owns everybody and is running anything and gets beat up by Kate Bishop was a little bit like, I was like, I don't know. Maybe it's just me who still remembers Netflix Kingpin, but I was like, you'd have been murdered, girl. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, quick, yeah. Fast. Like, I don't know about all this. So
yeah. Disney, don't mess with our Kingpin, please.
Yeah. So Jim Viscardi has entered the comments.
To be fair, it wasn't just
why Kate is he Bishop. Not on here?
It was Kate Bishop, a bunch like trick arrows from Hawkeye, a car that sent him through. Like, there was a lot of things that
worked. There were a lot of things
and an explosion. Mm-hmm. Like, and use the wrestling term, I feel like they made him look strong even though he lost, and he barely lost. Like, he was owning her. Like, until that happened. So, like, you know, I feel
I'm
like
I'm just saying, maybe it's just Netflix has traumatized me forever, but like, I feel like all I was saying is if this was Netflix, girl, you'd be murdered, like, right now. Yeah. You're like, you'd be dead. And then the rest of the series would be Hawkeye dealing with killing a little girl, because that's what Netflix is.
Okay, so I see this in the comments, because there have already been a couple comments, and you brought it up, so I figured this is a perfect segue, because there are plenty of times.
Spoilers!
In the comments.
I know we already said at the beginning we're going full spoilers. Yeah.
There's plenty of times in the comics where, like, Fisk has to do stuff on his own with his own thing. And not just, like, I mean, there have been times in the comics where he's done. Yeah, because he is powerful for multiple reasons, right? His connections and network and all this other stuff. But, like, how the hell do you think he got all that? That's because he could literally take people and, like, break them physically. Like, the threat has to be real. You have to be able to back that up at some point. And he's done that many times over the years. And it feels like this Kingpin is a little more tied to, you know, has his ear to the street just a little bit more than, like, the high in the loft Fisk we're used to in the shows. I like this version more. Like, I like the Fisk being able to, like, go out and showcase, like, why he is still a threat. Like, at some point you have to kind of do it yourself, right? If you're in that kind of position. So I like this. Like, I don't want him to always just be Rapunzel and then he only comes down for superheroes. Like, no. Like, to me, that's not a Fisk I'd like. So
I'm wondering,
like, this.
The comic book outfit, Matt?
Oh, hell yeah. That's awesome. What are you gonna think? It's purple. It's purple and white. I wear purple all the time. I would wear white if I could have the.
But the Hawaiian, like, there was a red Hawaiian shirt.
I love the Hawaiian. Awesome. The Hawaiian shirt, like, that's my next cosplay, man.
Have you seen rich people in New York?
Yeah, I was about to say, if you're in New York and you're wearing that outfit, it's because you get your flight.
They don't care.
You know, they're going to the tropics.
Pete Davidson doesn't have that kind of wealth and power, and he dresses like that. Like, who cares? Like, yo, if you're in a position that, like, has that something. Kind of confidence and have that kind of swag, you wear whatever the hell you want. It's okay.
I mean, that is New York, by the way. No, I mean, that's real New York, like, straight up. Although I am one of those people who is raging that we didn't get that Spider-Man swing by, right? I was like, when that tree was going down, I was like, Spidey's catching this, right? Like, Spidey's going to catch this tree and just be like, hey, there you go, and I'm out.
I blame Phase Zero for making that a thing. That was never – Spidey was never going to be in this show. Why? Like, why was that ever – just because the movie and the
– No, it's just Rockefeller Center. Everybody's living by Rockefeller Center now and hanging
out. Calm down. It's the same Mephisto junk from last time. No, I saw that stuff. I'm like,
well, we know Mephisto's now in Doctor Strange, so it's okay.
Man, I definitely thought the Mephisto was
No, but I mean –
definitely not Spidey.
The end fight, though, that was good with the – I mean, it really made – I think this series has made Hawkeye's and his weapon set given a lot more respect, right? Like, the arrows actually had their own subplots, right? Getting more arrows, doing that, all those Hawkeye problems and what they can make from them. And, you know, you got to respect Hawkeye's arrows after this. So, good, because a lot of you needed that. You needed correction.
Are you looking at me? I can't tell. You're kind
of
looking
into the eye of the camera. Everybody in the world who didn't respect Hawkeye and is now coming to this like, oh, I love Hawkeye.
No, Hawkeye's
been the
that's
man.
Actually, never. See, that's
fair weather fans out there.
No, see, that's the problem. I don't bandwagon jump.
Oh, I wasn't looking at you. I know you're settle down. We know you're too peppery for that.
Right? I love this.
Nobody's accusing you of this.
As Kofi said though, this was my. I think I said last time, like someone would have to bring Cardiac in and shoot him for this to not be my favorite series. That did not happen, thank God. So this is my favorite hands down series. Lame post credits. I don't care about this musical.
Ew.
I know.
I was Everyone thought he was going to go in there and shoot them with like a net or something.
Something.
And to make them stop. It's
Christmas, you cynical bastards.
It was a Christmas gift. Song.
I didn't want it. I didn't watch it. I just was like, yeah, I know this is going to be dumb. And I just watched to see if it was like Yelena sitting there at the end. I mean,
I thought Yelena was going to come in and like punch.
Be sitting there laughing. No, I thought she'd be sitting there laughing. She would enjoy that.
Something. But no, it was literally just.
Or cry. It'd have been awesome if she was sitting there like shedding a tear, like really moved by it.
I know. And a lot of people love it though. And I get it. And for them, I'm happy.
People love that?
Yes. It was a Christmas gift. It was a reaction to fans who had said, I need to see the whole like Rogers. Because they. Put it out in press that the people who did the musical portion said they had produced like a whole, you know, song sequence and a whole thing. So people heard that and were like, oh my God, I need it. It's going to be the next Agatha all along. And so I mean, they literally gift wrapped it as a Christmas gift to fans and said, here you go.
And to those who love it, look, I love that you love it. Just for me, I was like, really? All the things we could get, and that's what I get to watch.
And to all of you who pushed end on your streaming like I did, you can come to our Christmas party. All right.
I swear, I kept watching it thinking there was going to be a point to it.
Should you be sticking up for the musical theater kids in the
city? I am a musical theater kid. I'm studying it in college.
That doesn't mean I want to
see it. I'm saying, aren't you, should you be fighting for these people?
It's my no, I, God. Anyways.
Okay, we sound like It's Always Sunny right now, and we're just yelling at each other. Yeah, this has been pointed out, which is they dumped all their episodes, so now all of It's Always Sunny season 15 is out on Hulu, so you can stream it now because they dumped it in 4 weeks, two episodes a week, and it was great. I love this season, by the way. Quick review. So check that out. All right, let's get back to Hawkeye and kind of clean this up. So Echo series. Are we ready? Alakwa Cox, I mean, did her thing. I am ready for this Echo series.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I hope it's hard. I mean, I hope it's like hard edged and like kind of like dark and awesome. And because the world she's been in, it seems like a pretty dark place. And like, I hope it gets pretty hardcore and brutal in there. And I want to see her. I hope Matt Murdock shows up in there too. Cause I would love to see a fight between her and Daredevil would be amazing. So
I just need more.
And if Kingpin's at the center of this, why not? And I feel like Echo is going to be a low key kind of backdoor reintroduction to Daredevil. Anyway,
probably that would make a lot of sense. Yep. And she was, she was a scene stealer in a lot of different times throughout the series. You know, I love the ending, by the way. With her and I actually was like, oh, that's great. Like, yeah, I want to know what happens, but that's the point. I want to know what happens. So I hope they kind of save that for her. I just need more Yelena. I need more Florence Pugh.
Well, that's the next thing we're going to go to. There's a lot in this series that has set the stage so that if we want, I mean, so let's get to the last part. Linda Cardellini is Mockingbird. Okay, so we did that, right?
Yeah,
they get the Rolex back. It's Agent 19. Agent 19 is Bobby. Bobby is Mockingbird. So
and Linda every Cardellini agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. fan was in arms.
Yeah. I saw that because I did the articles for comicbook.com about, you know, the reveal that Laura Barton, Clint's wife, is Mockingbird. And I forgot to mention Adrian Palicki in the original one I wrote. And then I went on Twitter and I was like, ooh, ooh, ooh. And I went right back to that article and was like, yeah, here's some love for Adrian Palicki, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We already had a Bobby in the MCU.
Supposed to get her own spinoff too.
But supposed to get her own spinoff. But it's the multiverse. So she belongs to the multiverse now. So it's all good, bro. Yeah.
Multiverse bros.
Multiverse bros. Bobby. So now the Mockingbird thing. So that was like a final piece. We really have everything in place that Hawkeye season 2 could be a lot of things, right? I, for one, and I tweeted this out, and it seems to be a semi-popular thing, is I need that Mockingbird in Hawkeye event series. Because I'm a Marvel fan, and I'm also a parent, and a mom and dad have to either save the world, save the family, and get back in time for make dinner show, I'm all here for. And just seeing the Bartons, like, go out and have, like, little marital things while they're, you know, like, doing awesome spy stuff. Like, I'm here for that.
Me
like,
too.
Absolutely. So, yeah, let's get that made, okay?
That'd be really
okay,
cool.
Okay, thank you. But we also have all the pieces in place to do some of that, to mix some of that classic West Coast Avengers stuff with some of the new West Coast Avengers stuff in a kind
please
of
please give
the
me.
The hodgepodge of stuff that Marvel. So like the classic Hawkeye and Mockingbird, you know, led team that was like in the what 80s, I think, and then 80s, 90s around that era. And then, you know, the new one with Kate Bishop and Hawkeye and all that run, you know, you can, like I said, there's a hodgepodge of Avengers.
You're
stuff
about
out
to get
the West
America
Coast.
Chavez. Yeah, and Doctor Strange.
It's so like, yeah.
Oh, so good.
I would love to see West Coast Avengers be a thing because
let's do it, man. Let's do it.
Yeah. Duck Pond Lame says, yes. A post-credit scene better than Rogers the Musical would have been Yelena Kate and Clint eating mac and cheese in
Thank
silence.
You.
Avengers shawarma style. That would have been much better. You just saved that post-credit scene. Thank you, Duck Pond Lame.
Seriously, man.
Just to mention, Doctor Strange 2 trailer is officially out now. So you don't have to hear our bootleg conversation about it.
Dope.
Yeah, it does look dope.
Let's go.
I am placing my bet that we don't know a lot about the villain, and that is not Strange Supreme. I'm not buying. Strange Supreme became a hero at the end of What If, guys. He decided to turn the corner and become a hero. I think it's going to be, if you look at the Doctor Strange poster, I think it's very telling. It shows like different slices of Doctor Strange and Scarlet Witch. I think there's going to be a lot more variants at play in this movie than we may think. And these two actors could be playing different variants of their own selves.
So cool.
And Evil Strange could be one of them. Evil Strange could also be a manifestation of whatever evil entity is at the heart of all this. Because people like Shumagorath, I mean, these evil demonic entities are like, their whole thing is you cannot perceive our true forms. And, you know, they appear as different things or whatever could do that. So,
okay, now here's the thing. I don't typically feed into Jim's hot hands comments. However, that is not a bad one. I think it is Strange Supreme, but I think the trailer red herring's positioning him as a villain. And if he says that line, that can still be a line that is like, oh, things are about to get interesting.
Yeah,
and he
that,
could still
yeah.
be.
Oh,
that's not bad. I got to give Jim his props.
Yeah. Wow. Love
Come
this.
On.
Also, so he's so hot. Evil Strange is so hot. The brows, like evil brows.
Still got that bad boy face going, huh?
Love it. Yeah.
Still got that bad boy face
well,
going.
They all took Winter Soldier away from
me.
He's all sweet now.
Life,
so
bad boys for life. All right. All right. Janelle, Evil Strange will just break your heart and leave you trapped in an empty dimension. But it'll be fun until then. I'm sure it'll be fun until then. All right. Ride that wave. But yeah, so that's a good, interesting theory, Jim Viscardi, that it, you know, we're going to get Strange Supreme, but it's not going to be, he's not going to be a villain. So that'll be kind of interesting if he has to kind of unite with him and kind of do that. But all right, do we have anything else from the Hawkeye finale that you guys want to get into or dissect?
I guess just like final thoughts, like what would you guys rank the final like episode? Oh. Because I've seen a lot of mixed reviews of people, like my favorite coverage site roasted this episode. I went in going, oh my god, I love this, and then I watched their video and I was almost like, I was just like turned off at them. I was like, oh my gosh, they're so like mean and they hate it so much.
Well,
like,
you can't make everybody happy, but I mean this overall, I mean, I think no matter what you say about it, you're comparing it against like the rest of Hawkeye, and comparing the rest of Hawkeye to the rest of the shows, it's just like, what are we really saying here? Like, how bad are we talking? Like, what's bad in this case? So like, is it as bad as the worst Falcon and Winter Soldier episode? The first one? No, not nearly. So like,
probably better than the best Falcon and Ken.
Is it as bad as worst? No, like, yeah. I mean, I would watch all of Hawkeye before I watched the first WandaVision episode again. Like, you know,
I don't get it.
And that's not to crap. Rushed.
I mean, there's a lot of that felt that way, but you know, this is again like this COVID stuff. We're always going to look back at an era of this and be like, things were off. Like,
okay, but yeah, seeing it's rushed though. Like, okay, so I think part of it is, am I a huge fan of the 6-episode format? No, because I don't. It doesn't need to be Netflix long because 13 is too long, and that's why a lot of those shows dip in the middle. Aside from Daredevil, which seems to just avoid that. But like most of the other shows dip in the middle and then come back around at the end and are really good, right? So there's a middle ground. And I think 6 is a hell of a lot closer. But could almost every single of these series use one more episode at the end to really help finish up tying those loose ends up and feeding into that finale? I think so. I think,
yeah.
I think 7 is just almost probably right on that perfect spot because it almost every single time I have felt like, man, they cut things off where they could probably, these need to be fleshed out just a hair more to really make that finale sing, right? I felt that almost every single way in every single series so far. So I think 6 is too short. But as that is the case, 6 is what we get, right? And so knowing that they have to finish all this stuff, I didn't feel like this was rushed. Like, I loved this episode. It's probably not my favorite episode of the series still, but I still really love this as much as I loved most of the series. So I came away hyped. Turns out Swordsman is, by the way, a good guy.
Stop.
He is not a bad guy.
Do not talk about my failures.
You said he was a bad guy.
I think it's a waste of Tony Dalton. Personally, I go back to the Better Call Saul thing. He's a great villain. He's a great sinister actor. I mean, but his thing was being crazy, goofy. He was very Joker-esque. He was goofy, but like, and then turned crazy and murdered people. So if they just got the goofy part, okay. But
and you didn't love the LARPers? They all get to be heroes.
Oh, I love the LARPers. I had no problem with the LARPers. High right now. Fine. Duck Pond Lame, who I'm pretty sure is related to me, and Jim Viscardi, who is like, you know, the guy who signs my check. Everybody call me out. I was wrong about something.
I wasn't even.
God does bleed. There you go.
Here we go. So anyway, we got to move on to comics.
Yes.
Yes.
Let's go to comics. Let's wrap this thing up. Christmas time.
A couple of quick things of news. We've actually talked a lot about the kind of Curse of the White Knight Batman universe that DC has been putting out. So Sean Murphy, they announced the next volume of this, which is actually going to take place 10 years in the future. It is called Batman Beyond the White Knight. And as the name suggests, Terry McGinnis for Beyond fans is going to show up in this. This kind of takes place after Curse of the White Knight and the recent Harley Quinn series. So Bruce is still in prison and everything, but this is going to kind of draw him out, and we're going to see a lot of those characters in the GTO come back in as someone steals his suit. Hint, hint, Terry. Like, there's this whole kind of thing, and it's because it's 10 years in the future, we kind of really get to see this world ratcheted up further and kind of the futuristic aspects of it, which have always been part of the series, but like now he really gets to kind of go all in on Neo-Gotham. So I am very excited that comes out next year. So I am stoked. Cool. Automatically one of my favorite, one of my most anticipated. We also got Tom King's new Batman announcement. He's teaming up with David Marquez. I love Marquez's work. I love Tom King Batman. This is going to be set in the past. So for people who have been keeping up with Batman, Catwoman, things like that, this is in the past. Kind of a more classic.
Anybody able to keep up with Batman, Catwoman?
Because this is kind of a more classic heist adventure thing, a limited series. And so we're going to get to see Batman in that as well. That's also next year. And then real quick, Marvel announced a new Jason Aaron-led Punisher series. And they are changing the logo.
Wow.
Which, of course, got everyone talking because that logo has been synonymous.
It's a big deal. Forever.
It's a big deal. It's also because that logo has also been co-opted by a lot of places, right? And there's been a lot of discussion back and forth around that logo and what it stands for. So the new logo debuted. Real quick, did either of you get to see the new logo? Thoughts?
I'm not attached to the Punisher logo. I've never been one of those dudes. I think you're a specific type of person if you're really attached to that logo. We all know the types. We don't have to get too deep into this. We know the people who like to run around and Punisher logos. And so I'm not too tied to it. I don't think it's really ever that essential to Frank Castle. I think you put Frank Castle in plain clothes and he's just as effective as a character. even more so in some ways.
Oh my gosh, wait, I'm looking at it. Is the thing with the horns?
Yeah, it's the thing with the horns. Here's the
Oh no.
They were like, you got this. Well, the point, it achieves the goal, which is make something too ugly that'll never be co-opted, right?
I don't like it at all. I don't think that was like a dragon.
Oh, Matt, you sweet, naive son boy.
I don't think that was the goal. I do think, though, it was they were trying to make it very distinct and away from the other one and still somehow keep the idea and the skull idea here. This is kind of a weird cross-media thing. I don't love it. But again, like in comics, right,
like
a lot of times.
I super don't love it.
Okay, so this is the logo. Thank you, Nick.
No, man, you got to throw some ninja vibes in there. It's not just a skull anymore. Okay. It's a ninja skull.
Oh, I don't like it.
Here's the thing. What I will give him credit for, though, is he does, because of the way the new story works out, he is going to be working with them, and he's actually kind of like, he's forced into like working on their side. So the aesthetic, as Kofi mentioned, does fit with them. He does kind of look like he belongs in there. I still don't love the logo, but okay, it's weird, but I understand it. Honestly, in a year we'll probably won't be talking about it and we'll move on to other things and it'll just be the logo. We'll all get used to it and it'll be fine.
Moving on.
All right, so moving into actual comic reviews this week, X-Men the Trial of Magneto. Now I know we skipped an issue talking, I think we skipped four as far as like talking about it on the show. But this is the finale, number 5 of 5. We finally get to find out who killed Scarlet Witch and why. And it's a bit of a... Okay. You know, we talked about The Matrix and how, like, we talked about The Matrix and, like, the first half is kind of, like, some people are looking at the first half as a separate thing and the second half of this thing. There's a part, a big chunk of this issue that I actually really enjoyed. I actually really enjoyed a lot of this issue. If the rest of the series had not been so,
you are holding back. This whole thing was trash.
Okay,
man.
No, but see, here's the thing. I don't feel that way. I feel like there's parts of this I really liked, but I don't feel like you can justify an entire 5-issue series with 10 pages. I don't feel that's fair. Like, I feel that means your book is not good. Like, I feel that means the series is not good.
Go ahead.
That's how I feel. So I'm not. You guys are right in the sense I have not liked the series at all. There were some initial things in the first issue that were interesting, but like there's like 10 pages of this book that I really like. But you cannot. It doesn't feel earned because you've spent so long just like doing everything wrong. I don't know that I love how we get to the point of why Scarlet Witch was doing this. I don't understand why we had to go through this whole rigmarole. to get there, I guess. Maybe that's how I feel.
Yeah, this is... okay, here's the thing. The purpose of this series is to kind of resurrect and fully rebuild Wanda as a character from all the different crap they've done with her. I don't understand any of that any better, any of that past stuff. I don't understand what we've rebuilt or how with all the mystic crap they did. And I don't even understand the outcome. I read those pages and I was just like, what? Like, I don't understand what the waiting room is, like what this matters to Krakoa and the rebirth process as. I'm not even clear on any of this. Okay. So out of like 5 issues, I don't think I got one thing clarified out of any of this.
So I agree with Jim where he says, man, me and Jim are agreeing a lot today. What is going on? So Jim said, how did they not just call this House of W? Also, Brywood says, could have just been a one-shot Wanda the Redeemer. Which I actually think might not be bad. Here's the thing. I think the 20 million people that weren't accounted for in the original protocols because they were lost in the cracks. Some of them, like we actually see like the baby play out where like the X gene hadn't manifested yet. So Cerebro couldn't scan. Like there are things. Proud Star, like coming back, was one of the people caught in it. Thunderbird, we get back. That's a huge deal to like, I feel like. So that part. And Wanda being necessary for that to happen, I think is really cool. And I think I feel like we come out of this with Wanda having some of that baggage gone. I agree with Kofi, though. There are whole parts where I'm like, why did we? That's very confusing. Like, I can totally see it. So I like the outcome, but it doesn't feel
I'm with Brywood, though. Like, you could have literally done, like, a one-shot or an annual where the annual could have been just resurrected Wanda, starting some mystic meditation that takes her through all that mystic crap from her past life and trying to truly rebuild her mind achieving that and deciding what to do with the weight of everything she's done is make more mutants instead of killing them off. The end. Yeah. That's a great end.
Oh my God. I didn't know what this was about until Kofi just said what he said. Yeah. I didn't know any, like, I didn't understand this at
all. This was one, that's the redemption. She killed off all the mutants. Now she brought back all these mutants. Like,
okay. And
scales balance. Like, we'd have done this in an annual. And it didn't need that many words to it. It could have been pictures and stuff like that.
I know, Janelle, you don't love X-Men books anyway, necessarily, but like,
but
do you kind of feel
Wanda.
That way?
I love right. Wanda.
I know you love Wanda.
And I wanted to like
people
this.
Like Janelle, because now Wanda has a TV show. She's hugely popular. And they were like, we can't sit on this effed up Scarlet Witch we have in the comics anymore.
Exactly.
Like,
we gotta
get a good Wanda. But that's Trial of Magneto. You can skip it. We just told you what happens. Wanda brought back all these dead mutants that have been, and now X-Men has a bunch more mutants to play with.
I don't even know how she brought them back. I don't understand.
Oh, let's move on.
Okay, because that'll be a whole other show. All right. So moving on to Batman, One Dark Night. In complete opposite, this is pretty easy to grasp. They are moving from Arkham Asylum. They are moving a villain who is very lethal, and they are moving him from one Arkham Asylum to Blackgate Prison. And it is essentially the story of that happening, all the different gangs in Gotham attempting to break him free for their own various reasons, some of them his own gang, and Batman watching his kind of trying to get him from point A to point B. That is essentially what this is. This is Black Label. This is Jock. I've seen a lot of like really big praise for this book. I enjoyed it. I wouldn't say I loved it, but I enjoyed it for what it was, which was like watching Batman try and kind of, you know, he starts out in the plane and then ends up on the ground. And it's kind of just him trying to follow this person who can feed off of electrical stuff of any kind, which Gotham is filled with at night. Right. And then it essentially ends in a blackout. And that's where we're going to see the next part of this adventure, because this is a multi-part adventure. So like, I liked it. I didn't love it, but maybe I'm just not. It's not clicking with me. It did look really, really. I mean, Jock's work is really good. What'd you guys think?
I think it falls into that area that we talk about often in comics, in that it was the sacrificial first issue just to pull off the epic twist at the end. Okay. And Brian Wood says he's not buying the next issues. I'm the complete opposite. I am so psyched for the next issues of this event series, because now that we've gotten to the central, the real premise, and this was an exciting, and by all accounts, this wasn't exciting. I mean, this is every one of my favorite B movies, right? B action movies. Assault on Precinct 13, 52 blocks with Mos Def and I think Bruce Willis, which is just literally got to get from, or that recent, what was that recent Jason Statham movie? There's been a bunch, but just getting from point A to point B, single night, you know, a lot of crazy stuff happening. The Bill Murray movie, I can't even believe I'm blanking on that movie, the heist movie that he does as a clown. Can't believe I'm blanking on that. That's one of my favorites.
I don't know that.
Everybody knows that. I can't even think of it right now. But anyway, I love those kinds of stories. And this is a Batman story about that. And this is an action pack. This whole issue is just a foot chase, right? Across Gotham, and a pretty intense foot chase with an electric powered villain who does something bad. And now Gotham is scary to begin with. Gotham in full blackout mode is going to be crazy. So I am all about these. Producer Nick Floyd for the win. Quick Change by Bill Murray. Bill Murray, yeah. Another one. So
I think this one.
Oh, my God. Stop this podcast and go watch Quick Change as soon as you're done. It is one of the greatest movies. Bill Murray is awesome.
Janelle, what were you saying?
I'm just trying to get a word in edgewise. I think it felt drawn out. I was bored. The art was pretty.
That's it from Janelle Wheeler, everybody. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
I know I don't have very much time here because I'm really like, where are you going? But I don't understand why DC books always feel like they need to be over 40 pages. Why can't they do what Marvel does and have shorter issues with more action /
Well, you're paying for the black label. You're paying for that black
label. I know,
label.
But it's like, come on. Like, I felt that like some, I just felt very drawn out. Like, I did not need all this dialogue. You know, of him just like on the calm, it just felt very over the, like, just too much. I was like, come on, I know what's happening. It's a chase. Like, okay.
Right. I mean,
that's really all it was. And it kind of felt like, okay, do something else.
I think comics are underappreciating those silent issues and going back to that kind of format. You don't need so much dialogue. You are correct.
This was drawn out. Man.
It could be done a lot in action and art in this one. But all right, I guess I'm the only one high on One Dark Night. I mean, sounds like Catwoman Lonely City was the Black Label pick of the week, Matt.
That has been good now for two whole issues. Nice. I don't choose the poll. All right.
I loved our poll. I liked our poll read.
Thank you. Yeah. No one chooses the poll for Venom number three. Venom number three, we're moving into. And this one, I mean, we've been following this along this entire time, right? We're starting to see this was very much a Dylan-centric issue, though. So no real Eddie presence here at all. Though he is obviously a part of the book, even when he's not there. But we really get to see kind of more about the Life Foundation, this new kind of version of it, so to speak. We get to dive into Eddie's past just because of who Dylan is interacting with, right? He was told to kind of go, and like you're starting to see like Eddie go into his bag of people that he's either pissed off or whatever in the past, and you know, for Dylan to go to. And we're also kind of exploring the differences between like the symbiote, what the symbiote wants, and like why Dylan won't bond with him and things like that. So there's a lot of that interesting stuff here. Overall, I will say this is probably my least favorite issue of the series, just because it kind of like we didn't really move any. I don't feel like aside from the very last maybe two pages, we didn't really move many things forward here. So it kind of felt like we were running in place. That said, there was stuff in there that I dug. What'd you think, Jada?
Yeah, I mean, same. You said it perfectly, but it's also not 40 pages, so it's okay. I'm really, really a big fan of Venom. Like, you guys have created this monster in me. Like, I am a big fan of Venom now. And so I'm really enjoying this whole shebang. And I understand that it's like a middle issue. You know what really resonated with me this week? During Halloween, we had so many like Halloween references and comics, but like I can't believe there's not like a bunch of Christmas references in these comics that have been released like during this time.
Yeah, there was a Christmas one shot, but I felt like Kofi would hurt me if that was one of the ones I put in, because it was like 60 pages and I was like, nope, it's gonna hurt me.
Okay.
So I skipped it. But I agree with you. Like, there's not a lot of like holiday cheer.
That's surprising. Yeah. Cause like you can't, every movie, every TV show, everything is Christmas. I'm surprised.
Also, the poll is not rigged, Brian Wood.
Poll is not rigged. How dare you, sir?
It's not a poll. It's Matt's agenda. Don't worry.
If it was my agenda, we would read Dark Hawk and Moon Knight every week. And Captain Marvel. That's what we would read.
That's comics. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. We got a couple things to mention. I'm just going to do in our mentions. I'm just going to shout out our anime side, comic book anime. We don't represent them nearly enough over here for how much great stuff they cover. But we got new stuff out. We got new trailers for Dragon Ball Super Heroes. The new Dragon Ball Super movie has released a new trailer, and we got a look at that and a bunch of breakdowns. Well, new Attack on Titans final run is coming back, and we have a new trailer for that. And a lot of breakdowns for it too over in our anime section. Plus, My Hero Academia is announced. I think we got about a year left of My Hero Academia before that's going to end. So if you haven't been jumping into that series and the manga, one of the best superhero things in anime, be sure to check that out. And we have new chapters of both Dragon Ball Super and Boruto, which all are having some exciting things happening in their kind of worlds, and even My Hero Academia, all dropping some hot chapters. Anime side of comic book is fire right now. Be sure to go over there if you're an anime fan. Check that out, because it is going down. Matt, you had some mentions before we get out of here?
So got to get my hands on the Marvel Zombies Zombicide from Simon and Spin Masters. So hopefully that'll be hitting at some point, probably in the new year when that breaks. Also, got to check out the Jurassic Park Legacy game from Funko Games as well. So hopefully that will also be coming out around the new year. And plus, if you're like me and watched a lot of Witcher and you want to talk Witcher stuff, you can hit me up on the Twitter. Of course, you can also find all of our Cram articles, all of our spoiler stuff, if you have watched, over on comicbook.com. So don't forget to check that out. Janelle, what you got?
Oh, and I'm just really excited. I finally got to see Spider-Man, and I did avoid spoilers until I saw it, believe it or not. So you want to tweet at me or you want to get into the conversation, you guys know where to find me. But I finally got to see it. And
if
you know me, you know my favorite characters in it.
You got to sell it to the stream. You want to hear Janelle's thoughts? Go to her stream. Yeah. Boom.
You can go to the stream. Yeah.
Throw a sub in there. For every sub, she'll talk to you about another part of Spider-Man. Boom. Heck, there we go. Otherwise, we want to say Merry Christmas, happy all-around holidays. We'll see you guys one more time next week before the new year. And we might have something special for you at the end of the year.
Bum, bum, bum.
We might have something special for you guys before the end of the year. We might have a very special show. I'm not going to make too many promises. I hate doing that. I hate committing.
Yes.
But yes, we might have something very special for you guys next show. So be sure to listen to our last show of season 3 and of 2021 next week. For everybody who's just catching up now, all our loyal listeners, sorry, we, for scheduling reasons, you know, Friday's Christmas Eve, we got to let our video team get a little rest.
Yeah, man.
I say work them as if they're robots, but apparently they're not robots yet, so we can't do that. So we wanted to give them the day off to spend with their families and friends and do whatever
video
they
team rules.
So we had to go a day early today, but I mean, just gives you guys more time to listen to the nation. So thank you for listening in. This is Comic Book Nation. We'll see you guys again next time. Peace.
Merry Christmas.